You want this thing running or just fine without it? Okay, so chapter 9, canto 2. So chapter 9 is answers to questions that come in chapter 8. So who can recall from chapter 8? Well, I was going to say, who can recall the first question? First three questions. Question 1, 2, and 3 are being addressed. Even we can go back and Maharaj Parikshit speaking, and he's glorifying the hearing process, hearing about Krishna process, and he describes that it cleanses from the heart all misgivings, just like autumnal rains cleanse muddy waters, and it cleanses not just by in a small dosage, but in a very broad way. All persons benefit by this process, such a favorable process. And when one becomes cleansed by that process, one doesn't want anything else. One will never give up the lotus feet of Krishna. Back home, back to Godhead, one-way ticket. That'll be nice. You don't have to get a return ticket. Just a one-way ticket. Okay, so now the questions. First question that was asked by Shukadev, by Maharaj Parikshit to Shukadev, what was the question about?
How does a living entity get the material body? What is the cause?
Yeah.
And how does it
develop? Is it just an accident? I was thinking about this. This is a nice topic. There's this issue, well, I won't go too far into it. There's an issue about fall and no fall. Do the living entities fall from the spiritual world, or there is never a fall from the spiritual world, just eternally conditioned? And the answer to that one would be, yes, it's an accident. If one were to say, there was no fall, well, why was there no fault? Why was the living entity captured in the material world? Well, there's no reason. Just it was whimsically decided that way. Some, you go in the material world and rot and suffer. Some, you stay in the spiritual world and you enjoy without anxiety. And why some in the material world? Some in the spiritual world, no reason. Just capricious. Close my eyes and, okay, you're over there and you're over there. And eternally like that. Anyway, so that's not the answer. But what's the answer that Shukadeva Goswami gives? Does he answer the question? What is the answer that he gives? Someone besides the person who supplied the question. What was the answer that he gave? Not you, Sumit, but behind you. Because
as long as your material desires,
yeah. He says something very special about the situation of being in an embodied and deluded by the body situation. What does he say? What's in the verse specifically? What is the statement of Shukadeva? What does he say?
It's all like a dream.
Yeah.
Just like a person, if he is seeing in a dream that his head is being cut.
No, he didn't say that one. I said that. That's said elsewhere. in the Bhagavatam. That specific example is given. Here it says, as if seeing oneself in a dream. And the other example is not just seeing himself being cut, but seeing his head being cut off, which is not possible. But one can see that in a dream. And so what's the relationship like? Relationship of dreamer and a dream. What's the relationship of the living entity with the material body? Aviram knows. Does anybody else know? We discussed it yesterday. It's the verse, the shloka. What's the relationship? You remember?
Illusion.
Ah, illusion. Okay. Right. There's no meaning to the relationship unless we accept that the relationship is based on illusion. Just like a person dreaming sees himself in a dream. Not like looking down and seeing your legs, but seeing yourself. That's not possible because the seeing power is here and you can't see yourself, but in a dream it's connected by illusion. So how does it happen? By illusion. Now, what's the next question? He elaborates. Shukadeva Goswami elaborates about the nature of that illusion. What does he say about the nature of that illusion?
One is an iron blind consciousness.
Yeah. And can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Means one identifies himself as everything as belonging to him and himself as the body.
Okay. There's actually, that's the standard way that we think of I and mine. That's the material. The materialist conception is I'm body and things in relation to the body are mine. But within this purport, Prabhupada expands that sense of I, not just to the materialist, but to another group of people. What's the other group of people, and what's the conception of I that the other group of people have?
The karma is missing that. Everything belongs to them.
That's the mind category.
And jnana is the thing that I am God. I am everything.
Yeah. Okay. So the karmi's conception of mine is connected to the conception of I and this body. And the jnani's conception of I is connected to I am the Supreme, I am everything, I am God. Both are in the deluded state. The jnani and karmi are both deluded by the I and mine conception, which means that it perpetuates material bodies, the illusory connection between the body and the self. Obviously, the mistaken conception of I am the body perpetuates through the activities performed in that consciousness involved in karmic bondage that we understand readily. The other is, since it's not our actual identity to think I am the Supreme, then we're caught in another kind of delusion, which means perpetual material body accepting program continues. Then the next verse that comes in the chapter, text 3, is the contrasting position, of the living entity that becomes freed from the I and mind conception. So can you elaborate a little bit about that person's position? What can we say more about them besides somehow they escaped the material and the speculative conceptions of I and mind? In the verse specifically, it describes that one goes beyond the influence of time. Very nice verse, actually. And one goes beyond the influence of material nature, because the material conception of mind falls within time. The body appears, and while it's manifest, it does some activities. So we become attached to the body and the fruits of the body activities, its mind, and then it disappears. It's influenced by time. And the living entity that becomes situated free from that covering is beyond time, beyond time's influence. And why is that? It's explained, we didn't discuss the purport so much, because the Supreme Lord is beyond time, and the Supreme Lord is beyond Prakriti. That's why the living entity who takes the linking process of bhakti instead of performing karma or speculation, again, to overcome the miseries of material existence, the devotee take shelter of the one who is beyond time and beyond Prakriti. So, in the purport, Prabhupada addresses, so this is not review, this is new material. Prabhupada addresses, he debunks the, or deposes the, material, this, the Gyani's conception of I am the Supreme. By, he gives three specific arguments. There's so many, but one of them is, the classic one is, if the living entity is supreme, then why is he covered? Why is he subject to time, and why is he subject to Prakriti? And then Prabhupada said, so the Gyani might say, I'm working on it, the post-dated check response. And then Prabhupada said, so well, even if we can concede in the future, he may become beyond Prakriti by his speculative endeavors, which he isn't going to happen. But let's just say for argument's sake, he could. Then still, how did it happen to begin with? Then another argument is Krishna says, surrender unto me. Krishna is speaking, living entity is hearing, and he's saying, surrender unto me. So why does he say, surrender unto me, if me is the Supreme? Please explain that one, if you are the Supreme. And why does Krishna, who is Supreme, say, surrender unto him? Then another, a third argument is from Bhagavad Gita 9:10. Anybody offhand know what that verse is? Bhagavad Gita 9:10? Mayadhyakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam. So Krishna says he's in charge of Prakriti. It's under his adhyaksha, under his supervision. So, is the living entity supervising Prakriti? And if not, why not? because he's not supreme. And many, and he, one could go on and on, but those are it's like when Bhakti Vinod Thakur arrested Bhishikashane. You know that story? Living outside Jagannath Puri, saying that he was Vishnu, and his cohort buddy, he was an incarnation of Lord Shiva. And so he was, as an incarnation of Lord Vishnu, his favorite appearance was as Lord Krishna, so he would, his followers would go into Puri, and the ladies would come from Puri to see him in his hermitage in the forest, and he, as his, in his Krishna Leela, he would engage in rasa dance with them and enjoy conjugal relations with them, and that was his Leela, and they were foolish enough to accept that idea. Oh, he's God. And when the complaint went to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he requested the police to go and arrest him. They were, everyone was afraid because he had these mystic powers, and everyone was afraid that he would do something horrible to them or to their family. And so Bhaktivinoda Thakur went charging off into the forest himself with the constables. And when Bhaktivinoda Thakur came, Bhishikashane started shaking his head with all of his long hair, and fire was coming out of his hair, and all the constables stood back. Oh, he must be Vishnu. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, arrest him. And he was, because he was fearless, they finally did it, and Bhishikashane said, well, it's because of my Leela, Lord Vishnu is very, very kind and submissive to his devotee, and because you're Krishna's devotee, your Lord Vishnu's devotee, I'll go with you. Only because it's my Leela to do so. Very well. Off to jail you go. So, cheaters. So there's in the purport, Prabhupada is leading up to the next question, and that is how to differentiate the position of Krishna and the living entity, and Krishna's position. He's the controller of illusory energy. He's not in any time controlled by it. So, now in the purport, we didn't discuss this yet, but there's some reference. It's also in the verse that the verse says that when one reaches the position of being situated in his constitutional position, he's beyond time and material energy. Also, he gives up these two misconceptions of I and mine. So, this is just to connect this with our evening class. This is anukul and pratikul. It's preceding the pratikul, rejecting the conceptions of I and mine. One literally has to discard them. Analyze them and discard them. And so carrying for a devotee on the path of bhakti, one has to discard the expectations that are deeply we're trained up in, and that is material advancement will make you happy. That's the mind conception discarded. And the I conception, I'm this body, but also I am supreme conception, has to be discarded and that rejected. And in its place, well, here's how Prabhupada writes. So the science of bhakti yoga, of worship of the Lord, glorifying the Lord, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam from the right sources, and being always in the association of pure devotees should be adopted in earnestness. So there's the activity, and then there's the spirit behind the activity. Complacency and devotion don't get you very far. In earnestness, this is the discussion that we had yesterday, the qualification of applying message of bhakti is our sincerity. That's the meaning of this earnestness. Earnest. It's a synonym for sincere. In all earnest, I really want such and such. So it has to be taken up in earnestness. That's the dedication, in the other term that we'll be discussing this evening, dedication of the self, atma nivedana or atma nikshepa, dedication of the self to the process of bhakti in order to achieve shelter of the Supreme Lord, taking that up very sincerely. Lethargy, casualness, complacency won't work. So what was the next question? First question was, what's the relationship between the living entity and the body, and how did the living entity get entangled with the material body? How did it happen by the agency of the illusory energy? What's the next question that Maharaj Pariksit asked?
He wants to know, how is the body of the Supreme Lord different from that of the living entity? And also, how Lord Brahma's body is different from...
Okay, that's a third question. You've got two and one answer. And what specific thing did he portray as an example with the body of the Supreme Lord in contrast with the body of the living entity, or in comparison to the body of the living entity? What specific reference did he make about that?
Supreme Lord, to do this incarnation, he takes up the body of the...
To fulfill the purpose of creation.
So he takes up the body of Karanadakshaya Vishnu and Arvadakshaya Vishnu.
Yeah.
So to fulfill a purpose, and Supreme Lord is accepting a body, and out of desires, the living entity accepts a body. Although Supreme Lord's body is very gigantic, how is...
Yeah, because some material bodies are also gigantic. They have some purpose and some desire. So, is it the same or different? That's the question. And then the answer is starting in the next verse, text 4, which we haven't discussed yet. The translation, Shukadeva Goswami replies, O King, the personality of God had been very much pleased with Lord Brahma, because of his non-deceptive penance in bhakti yoga, presented his eternal and transcendental form before Brahma. And that is the objective goal for purifying the conditioned soul. So he's answering this question, but he's not giving one has to be a little intelligent to understand how he's answering the question. It's not a second grader's level of answer. It's a subtle presentation of an answer, but it's That's the answer. His body is transcendental. Unlike the body of Brahma, which is different in two ways. How is the body of Brahma different? Well, when is it? It appears within time. He's awarded a body by the Supreme Lord, which stays for some time and then disappears, is annihilated. And here the form of Lord Vishnu is described specifically as eternal. So the Lord's manifesting his eternal form is different than Lord Brahma receiving a temporary body which is not eternal, which lasts for some time and is destroyed. And along with the same thing, the body of the Supreme Lord is, from the previous verse, not influenced by the material energy, whereas the body of Lord Brahma is made of the material energy, influenced by the material energy, and does such things as creating, although the Lord does nothing. He does, he fulfills the act of creating through the body of Lord Brahma, as he might fulfill the act of whatever it is that we do through our material bodies. He's doing nothing. And the second thing is, his form is described as transcendental. So transcendental, in part, that means beyond the laws of nature, but then it's also Sachit Ananda Vigraha, which is described in the purport. And Lord Brahma's body is not, proven by the fact in this verse that when he, and in the next verse, next series of verses, that when he was born, he was bewildered. So Sachit Ananda bodies are not bewildered. When Garbhodakshaya Vishnu appeared, or when the form was manifested, he wasn't bewildered. What do I do now? And how do I do it? And what's next? And not bewildered. But Sachit Ananda Vigraha. So Prabhupada explains, these purports are wonderful. So he's giving two statements that are summary statements right within the text of the purport itself, that in this verse, Shukadeva Goswami is clarifying the difference between the Jivatma and the Paramatma, which is essentially what the question was. How is the body of the Supreme Lord and the body of the living entity different? But the I conception, carrying over from the previous texts 2 and 3, one who's carrying that mistaken conception of I am the Supreme mixes, or, you know, gets it wrong. He has an incorrect, improper understanding of living entity and the Supreme. I am the Supreme. No, you're not the Supreme. Well, how are we different? So this is indicating, as Brahma and Paramatma are different, Lord Brahma and Paramatma are different, we're also different. Prabhupada writes, generally, people have many wrong conceptions about both Paramatma and Jivatma. The wrong conception of the Jivatma is to identify the material body with the pure soul, and the wrong conception of Paramatma is to think him on an equal level with the living entity. But both misconceptions can be removed by the one stroke of Bhakti Yoga. which is the non-deceptive penances of bhakti that Brahma underwent. So then Prabhupada spent some time explaining this non-deceptive and deceptive. The Sanskrit word is avyalika, vratadvrataha, non-deceptive, avyalika, vyalika and avyalika. So non-deceptive penance. In one sense it's fundamental. Non-deceptive means where the eye and mind conceptions are gone. Non-deceptive means where I understand who is supreme and who is subordinate, and I'm subordinate, and I serve the supreme. No deception. I may not have fully realized my identity, but I'm not starting with a premise that's deceptive. So non-deceptive penance. So the process of bhakti, he's saying, is the non-deceptive process, and the other processes are essentially deceptive because they have not, unless and until they accept the supreme and subordinate relationship. Because when that's there, a supreme subordinate relationship is clear. Service. I must serve the supreme. Then there's another sense of non-deceptive. He doesn't explore it so much in the purport, but whose motive was non-deceptive. That is, even within bhakti there can be deception. And deception starts with self-deception. One's deceiving of others is a byproduct of self-deception. And non-deceptive means that I want to realize this relationship with the Supreme. That's my motive. And deceptive motive is, I'll adopt this process, but really I don't want to realize and enter into my relationship with the Supreme. I want some other things. And here's my other things wish list. You can create more. I want material happiness. I want happy family life. I want wealth. And I want, I take a little disturbance, but not very much. And if I don't get what I want, well, bye-bye devotional service. Because that's not what I really want, is a relationship with Krishna that's got all this, these thorns in the path. I want a path that has no thorns. So, and it brings me to that, it's just like the kingdom of God without God. I don't need a relationship with God, I need happiness. Basically, it's the same happiness that brings one to the material world to begin with. Desire for happiness apart from the Supreme. I want happiness apart from the Supreme. I'll take up the path of bhakti. That's deceptive. Non-deceptive is whatever obstacles may be there in the path, that's okay. I accept them as what I deserve from my past wrongdoings and mistakes and so forth. That's there. But I want my relationship with Krishna. So Brahma wanted that. Brahma wanted several things. He wanted to know how he was to fulfill this very strong impetus that he felt to create. But he couldn't ask any. He couldn't find the answer within himself. He was bewildered. And There's actually several things that are mentioned in the next purport. So, in order to fulfill those things, he turned to Krishna. I'll go through those things. It's by the process of bhakti. You don't have books. In the purport of the next text, text 5, well, the text 5 reads, Lord Brahma, this is the translation, the first spiritual master, supreme in the universe, could not trace out the source of his lotus seat, lotus flower that he was sitting on. Couldn't trace out the source. He was smart. He was intelligent. So he saw, here's the lotus. It's got a stem. Let me go follow the stem. And if I follow the stem far enough, I'll find where the stem comes from, and I'll find out where I came from. Good professor, right? So he did that, but he couldn't find the source of the stem. And not only he didn't know where the source of the lotus seat, which means the source of himself, he could not understand how he could do this creating. He was not getting direction for his work. We sometimes find that, right? You have a problem to solve and it's not coming. The solution is not coming. You try this and try, you know, something, and just nothing seems to work. So he didn't have a professor he could go to. And so he just had the process of bhakti to rely upon. But he was the most qualified person in all of creation. So that's where he turned to. The essence of what Prabhupada is presenting here is that he wanted to know Krishna, and by knowing Krishna, one becomes the knower of all things. There's that statement in the Vedas. One who becomes the knower of Krishna becomes the knower of all things. Now, the knower of all things doesn't mean how many grains of sand are there in the Sahara Desert, or where is Osama bin Laden, or some other material subject matter. It means the important questions of life. Like, here's the answers, the subject matters that are answered by bhakti. One gets knowledge of the spiritual sky far beyond this material sky and its paraphernalia. One can understand the process of fulfilling the work that we have to perform, like Brahma, the process of creation. He was endowed by the Lord with creative impetus, but he didn't know how to do it. We also have some impetus for work. We may not know how to do it. We have some inquisitiveness about the spiritual world. What's it like? Where is it situated? What is life there? We can understand the source of our very existence. And by that we can then understand our purpose. It helps to ask the question, what's the purpose? Because if we don't ask the question, we're not likely to get the answer. Or if we're supplied the answer, we'll discard it because it's not what's important to us. What's important to us is another set of things. How to get the A in our next exam. How to get entrance into the next level of study. How to fulfill material ambitions. What about the goal of life? I don't know about the goal of life. I just want to get the A in the exam. But if we're not inquiring about it, we're not going to find the answer, even if it's thrown in our face or thrown in our lap. but one takes up like Brahma did and inquire in the nature of absolute questions, then one comes to understand all of these important questions of life. And the point that Prabhupada is making in the purport is that, and not otherwise. So Brahma was uniquely qualified. That is to say, we don't have the qualification that Brahma had. So we can't just turn to Krishna from within the heart and get the answers to all those questions. Brahma had that qualification. Krishna gave him the answers. After Krishna gave him the answers, after he qualified himself further. So we also require this as Brahma, the sending mercy of the Supreme Lord. Basically, what Prabhupada is saying is the ascending processes will never work. Never disclose Krishna, never disclose the answers to these questions. One may come up with some answer and hold on to it and write books about it and influence other people to accept it, but it's never going to be the genuine answer. So this is very intricate. These answers are like synthesizing many answers into one answer. So what I'm trying to do is kind of separate it out a little bit, and we'll put it back together again, just like the answer that he gave. But it's glorification of the bhakti process, the essence of what's going on, and that becomes, you'll see, as the chapter develops, that's really important. The glorification of the bhakti process, because through that bhakti process, Brahma realizes everything. He gets all of his questions answered. And as Maharaj Parikshit is getting his answers from Shukadev, Brahma got his answers directly from the Supreme Lord, who was the original teacher of Lord Brahma, who was then the teacher of this Sampradaya, original preceptor. But the principles are the same, so this is another distinction. One of the questions was the difference between the body of the Supreme Lord and that of a living entity. So the body of the Supreme Lord is eternal and sat and chit and ananda, not like any living entity, and beyond time, beyond prakriti. The conditioned soul, however, as we'll see in the case of Lord Brahma, he becomes situated like that. His body doesn't become Satchitananda, but his consciousness becomes like his constitutional consciousness. And he has a certain procedure that he's following. That is, he's inquisitive, and when he hears from the Supreme Lord, he's submissive. He's so submissive that he does it. And he does it for 1,000 celestial years. 1,000 years by the calculation of the demigods. So he hears, imagine this one. You want to know the answer to some question, and you go out searching for the answer, and you hear two syllables repeated twice, and then you follow that for 1,000 celestial years. We don't have such quality. We don't have the quality of Brahma. We can, you know, maybe follow until we walk out of the room. And then forget. And then have to be reminded. and then we're reminded and then we don't apply it. We remember it, we're lazy. Not Brahma. He wanted to know the answers to these questions. And he heard tapa twice, and then for one, so here's the calculation of 1,000 celestial years, somewhere here. Take one of our years and multiply it by 2, by 6, by 30, by 12, and by 1,000. And that's one celestial year. Excuse me, one of our years is one celestial year is that many of our years. They have 1,000 celestial years. So he was fixed in his determination. And he didn't even see the person that it came from. But he understood this must be because only one other person, that's my source of origin. My question is, what's my source of origin? Now I'm getting the means for that answer. I didn't get the answer. I'm getting the means for the answer. Okay, so that's what I'm going to do. 1,000 celestial years. That's high quality bhakta. Prabhupada explains that he was initiated by that sound vibration. Actually, the sound vibration was an instruction, and then from within the heart he was given Tene Brahma Hridaya Adikavaye. He was given that instruction, that mantra, 18-syllable mantra, Gopal Gayatri mantra. Describes it a little bit different in Brahma Samhita because they're different Brahmas. So all of this, Prabhupada is saying in the purport, it's the glorification of the bhakti process, how we get to get out of the I and mind conception. But so it's tapa that's non-deceptive. We're not trying to impress other people or even ourselves. We're trying to realize our eternal nature and our relation with Krishna. And it's also, so besides glorifying the bhakti process, it's answering another question. That is, what's the nature of the Lord's form and his abode? We already heard at the very beginning of the Bhagavatam, the first verse of Canto 1 Srimad Bhagavatam, Narasta Kuhakam, without material quality. The Lord and his abode and the paraphernalia and the forms and the activities there that don't partake of material nature. So that's the Lord, and one who connects with the Lord by this bhakti process comes to the same position by the mercy of the Lord. So it's not, so there's a point that's being made in the purport. Material life, eat, drink, and be merry and be happy, and realization of our eternal spiritual nature, they don't go together. We'll just have to reconcile that fact, accept the fact. For a person's on a spiritual path, it just, they don't mix. And but there are people out there that will say it does mix. I was looking at a publication. Gotten the idea that there are lots of people who are not reaching with the message of Krishna consciousness because it's too uncomfortable for them. They just, you know, not that the, anyway, the teachings are very pure and people recognize purity. They may not be able to follow it, but they recognize it and appreciate it. And especially with recent events, September 11th and things since then, people are reaching out for God, and God and spirituality are becoming even more and more fashionable. Bibles are selling like they've never sold before. American flags are also selling like they've never sold before. And gas masks are being sold like never before in anticipation of some biological warfare. So they're taking shelter of technology, taking shelter of their nation, and taking shelter of God. So they got all bases covered. So thinking, I'm sure we can present Krishna consciousness to a broader group of people than we have been at this time. It's a very good time for preaching, Prabhupada said, when there's war. So I was looking at how other people package their thing. So it's acceptable, so they'll come in larger numbers. So there was one that's very, very explicit that said that in the past it's known in traditions around the world that when people really wanted to get in touch with their spirituality, they would take up monastic life or go to the forest, live in seclusion, pray to God, devote themselves to God, undergo austerities and penances, and approach God. Well, it's a new world and we don't need to do that anymore, and you can just have your sense gratification and spirituality too. Here's how you do it. We'll give you a little seminar on how to do it. Blatant. Probably very popular. We're not going to package things like that, because that's cheating people. And it's cheating ourselves. But, so this non-deceptive penance, we have to be prepared to pratikulyasya varjanam. Leave aside things that are incompatible with bhakti. And the tapa, this is, it's important to bear this in mind. What was the tapa that Brahma underwent? There's different kinds of tapasya. And anyway, aside from saying what tapasya it wasn't, I was reading something where it was describing Gargi, who was the son of Garga, who was a student of Bharadraj Muni, and he was a contemporary of Krishna. Bharadraj Muni was a Brahmana, obviously, Bharadraj Muni. So this Gargi, he was a Brahmana, and his brother-in-law, don't know exactly how this happened, maybe he had a sister who married a, anyway, brother-in-law. His brother-in-law ridiculed him. His brother-in-law was a Kshatriya, and he ridiculed him by calling him a eunuch, like, you're a sissy, you're not like me. And members of the Pandava dynasty, the Yadu dynasty, they outwardly laughed. They found it humorous that he was being ridiculed this way. So Gargi got very angry. So he didn't want to get back at his brother as much as he wanted to get back at members of the Yadu dynasty. So he went to the forest and underwent austerities in order to get a benediction that he could get back at the Yadu dynasty. And he went to the forest, and for food he accepted ground iron filings only. I don't think it was offered to Krishna either. for 12 years. And finally Lord Shiva appeared before him and requested him to accept the benediction. So he wanted the benediction that he could have a son that would harass and get back at the Yadu dynasty. So he was given the benediction. And Gargi, being a brahmana, was requested by the king of the Yavanas, who was unable to produce a child with his queen, that you can produce a child with my queen. So he agreed, and Kaliyavana was born. And Kaliyavana is described that he was of the temperament of Lord Shiva at the time of devastation, from the time he was a little boy. And when he grew up, he was the same. He was just invincibly strong and a great leader, and he had amassed an army of 30 million soldiers. And he, Charasandha thought, oh, he would make a good friend. Let me go buddy up with Kaliyavana. And he incited Kaliyavana to attack Mathura and kill Krishna. So Kaliyavana was happy to receive that invitation, and he charged with his army attacking Mathura. Anyway, so the story goes on, but demons, austerities are also known to non-devotees, tapasya. So, but devotees accept tapasya that's pleasing to Krishna. So the tapasya of Lord Brahma was that he chanted this 18-syllable Gopal Gayatri mantra for 1,000 celestial years. That was his tapa. And Prabhupada says, one who is thus initiated into the disciplic succession is able to achieve the same result, seeing Krishna face to face, or power of creation, being able to execute one's duties and not be bewildered, how do I execute this duty? One is given the capacity to do that by proper tapasya and by this initiation into the disciplic succession. Chanting of this holy mantra is the only shelter of the desireless pure devotees of the Lord. Simply by such tapasya or penance, the devotee of the Lord achieves all perfections like Brahma. And he emphasizes the same thing, that although Brahma received this initiation from within his heart, we don't have that qualification. Our initiation is through the, Prabhupada uses the language, the current link. One should approach the current link or spiritual master in the chain of disciplic succession. After being initiated by the proper spiritual master in that chain of succession, then one should engage himself in discharge of tapasya, in the execution of devotional service. It's not that after initiation, siesta time. I've worked hard to get this initiation, so I deserve a break. So, no breaks from devotional service. But, because that's our constitutional position, we don't get breaks from our constitutional position. We rather take up tapasya. That's so he was initiated, Brahma, by hearing the mantra and the receiving the instruction, tapa, you perform it diligently. So, along this line, just another embellishment, a nice appreciation, is Brihat Bhagavatamrita by Sanatan Goswami. It's being translated by Gopi Pranadana, who stays at Govardhan, and being published by the BBT. So the team of BBT editors, Dravida and Jayadvaita Swami and Keshava Bharati Prabhu and a few others. It's at the printer now, maybe by the end of the year, Christmas time, it'll be out. And it's going to be part one, will be out, and part two is all about, the theme of it is the same as what's here. Gopakumar achieving perfection by chanting his mantra. But unlike Lord Brahma, he had some idea of what the mantra was, how to chant it, what procedures of living to follow that would enhance the effectiveness of chanting. He didn't get thorough instruction, but he just received mantra, and he had faith in that mantra. And he tells his story to Jana Sharma, a brahmana from Mathura, who similarly, he received his mantra in a dream from Kamakya Devi. He was strongly materially inclined. So he left Mathura and went to a place in Assam where Kamakya Devi is worshipped. And he had a lot of faith in Kamakya Devi, and she appeared in his dream and told him to chant this eight-syllable Gopal mantra, or no, something, not Gopal, some mantra. And he didn't pay much attention, it's just a dream. Then it happened a week later, same dream. So he took it seriously and started chanting his mantra. And through chanting of his mantra, all kinds of things started to change in his life. He just had to have faith in Kamakya Devi, and she said to do it, so he did it. Something like Lord Brahma. He wanted, you know, to understand how to execute his duties, and he heard this from within his heart and received this Gopal Gayatri mantra, and so he did that chanting. Yeah. And he achieved perfection. So it's a very, very fascinating, detailed, very detailed, and very it points out so many interesting things about our Vaishnava philosophy, Brihad Bhagavatamrita. When it comes out, when I come through here, we'll have a little seminar on Brihad Bhagavatamrita. It's really nice. It's ecstatic. I did some from the first part. We went to a farm in Pennsylvania during early September, about a month ago. About 90 people came through the seminar and just covered part of it. I had a great time, I know that, discussing it. And it was recorded, and I only got through like half of part one. Really, really nice. So, as devotees, back to Second Canto, Chapter 9. As devotees, we also have our Hare Krishna mantra, which anyone can receive and chant, even without initiation, and become purified. But one should, to understand the way of bhakti and receive the knowledge connected to the conclusions of bhakti, we have our process of spiritual master. We don't have the qualification of Brahma. Prabhupada is pointing that out. Tene Brahma Hridaya Adhikavaya. We don't have that qualification. But we have our limited qualification, and limited qualification has its procedure also. And we can come to the same fullness, you keep seeing it, this, the same fullness of what Brahma achieved in our present age. So, it's mention is made already that Brahma saw the form of the Lord. Now it's breaking that all down in detail, and the Chatur-Sloki verses are spoken by the Lord when Brahma comes before the Lord. So it's a cliffhanger, some suspense. to find out what Brahma is. Very, very wonderful description. Brahma's vision of the spiritual world, even before there's the material world. I mean, when Brahma is born, there's nothing, and there's nobody. It's just darkness and the lotus flower. And his tapa. And then the whole spiritual world, by the mercy of the Supreme Lord, is manifest before him. Anyway, to be continued. It's very nice. Very, very nice chapter. Is there any discussion? Yeah.
Why is it said that the living entity will not fall when he attains his constitutional position?
The question is, why the living entity will not fall?
Yeah, because over a period of time some living entities will be coming and then again we will have forgotten. Then this cycle will be continuing.
I'm not sure what you're saying.
Once the living entity goes from material world to the spiritual world.
Once the living entity goes from the material world to the spiritual world.
Why cannot he fall back?
Oh, it's possible to fall back, theoretically. Or, what's the right word? Yeah, theoretically, or... Prabhupada makes that point very clear. What you're saying, Prabhupada makes it very clear. It's possible. Because it's possible because living entity is marginal. We can be influenced in either direction because we're marginal. So there's the word. We have that potential. Nice physics term. Potential but not kinetic. Because Krishna protects his devotee. He gives his promise. So even if... So the devotees... Two things, Prabhupada said. They learned their lesson. So even that potential is there, they won't make the same mistake again. And the other is Krishna protects his devotee. He gives his promise to protect his devotee. So he doesn't take away their free will. He doesn't change their position from being marginal to something other than marginal. But he protects them. Okay? It's not mature.
How do we strengthen that desire?
Practice. Cultivation. Two things. Cultivation and detachment. Krishna's answer in Bhagavad Gita. It's the mind that tricks us. The mind is filled with so much rubbish. Intelligence says yes, the mind says maybe. Listen to this one. Check out this. Da 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 da. Blah blah blah. And next thing you know, the intelligence is bewildered. Just like that. Very quickly. Constant practice. That's the same. non-deceptive penance for a long time, constant practice, and detachment. And that detachment means attachment to the Supreme, just like the mention from Nectar Devotion, a little attachment to one of these five most potent things very quickly brings one to the spontaneous stage of devotion, where we're not any longer dependent upon the regulations. So we diligently follow the regulations, practice, cultivate, and try to become attached to Krishna, or even attached to the processes of approaching Krishna. And then we can become mature. If not, we'll remain immature. See a lot of that, more so than mature. It's cultivation. And detachment. Okay. Let go. The mind proposes, and you just say, I'm busy. Come back later. I'm busy. I'm cultivating Krishna consciousness. Come back in a few lifetimes. Yeah, therefore we need instructions to have clear conceptions. Definitely. One person I know, I was going to say this in the car, but I thought it wouldn't be too good, the taxi cab driver. I know somebody, a Sikh, who somebody just visited in Dubai. And Dubai is very friendly to America. I just got word in Oman. They're very supportive of, you know, what America and Britain are doing, because the king in Oman doesn't want the same thing to happen to him that happened to the king of Afghanistan. King of Afghanistan got ousted because of that same element. So if that element gets stopped, that's good for the king, because they could just export the same element to Oman, and there goes the king. He didn't like that, so he's very supportive. But there's another group of people that like what Osama bin Laden is doing so much, that the report, he said, just to give you some idea, in the hospitals, the number one name that children are being named is Osama. He's a hero. Used to be Muhammad, now it's Osama. So, if there isn't a clear conception, there's a lot of people buying into that conception. And, you know, in one sense they're innocent. In another sense they're foolish. They're just being misled. So we have to be careful not to be misled. We also have to be careful not to be blind followers, even of the right thing. Can't be lazy and be successful in spiritual life. So we need the right conceptions and adhere them regularly. Cultivate right conceptions. And whisk out very briskly misconceptions. Don't be lazy, let them linger around and just clutter around and accumulate and start to smell bad. Like some rotting garbage. Clean. Discarding misconceptions. It's right in the misconceptions of I and mind. You know, that's very fundamental. It covers a lot of bases. We can't do it just by, you know, our own force. We have to make some effort, but then some mercy has to come so we can become successful. So the cultivation is with mercy, to empower our efforts to cultivate, just like Brahma. Yeah, we have to have the right conceptions of things. Otherwise, there's a lot of them out there, and they'll seep in. It's one of the things that, this on the subject, it's one of the things that our the very serious followers would say, the leaders of our, and that is after the departure of Great Acharya, that we don't start filling up our ideology. It happens. It happens, you know, historically such a thing happens. So we have to be very vigilant. Individually and collectively. Purity is the attraction for the soul. Something else?
I was thinking a similar question. A lot of the parts got answered. Like, for us to move from the external energy of Lord Krishna to internal energy, remembering of Krishna is the key factor.
Remembering Krishna?
Because we are in this external influence because we have forgotten our internal relationship with Lord Krishna. So, certainly the conception we are carrying while remembering truth of Lord Krishna is a very important factor.
Yeah, and we can assume, like Akshay's question, that it's what we're carrying is material. So what we need to do is cling very tightly to the conception that comes from this descending process. Therefore, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from the right sources is really critical. And hear it with great attention. And like we're trying to do, analyze it very carefully, study it scrutinizingly, and then hold on to it. Accept that conception, discard the other. So?
Considering that we are as a spirit soul is limited, how does this become? Because whatever we analyze and then accept.
That's okay. We're tiny, but the process of analysis is only so that we can, it's secondary. Primary is Shabda. And Jiva Goswami explains this brilliantly. After discarding the rational faculty or the process of reason as the means of knowing the Supreme, he accepts and explains why we must accept descending Shabda as Pramana, the means of knowing the Supreme. Then he goes back and says, but we don't discard the reasoning faculty. We use it all the time. But it must be in accord with Shabda. Therefore, it becomes empowered to help us rather than prevent us from approaching the Supreme. So the essence is not the scrutinizing study, but it helps. The essence is Shabda, and the other helps firmly accept Shabda. And our acharyas engage in it all the time. And they're not wasting their time, and they're not interested in wasting our time either. Anything else? Yeah.
Given the complexity of Brahma's job, why is it that Lord Krishna took his whatever he did as an offense, deciding with the gopis and the cows?
Why did Krishna take what Brahma did as an offense? And meaning the stealing of the calves and the cowherd boys. Because it was an offense, but Krishna didn't take it as an offense. Krishna corrected him, that's all. How Krishna corrected him was he displayed his mystic opulences. It just blew the mind of Lord Brahma and humbled him to the max. Then he realized, wow, big offense. Because it was. So, but Krishna didn't punish him for his offense. You're an offender, off to jail. He just corrected his heart. In hearing your question, what comes to my mind is the position of non-deceptive is like the position of pure devotion. So how do you achieve the position of being non-deceptive and be vigilant for deception is based on the strength of pure devotion. In other words, the process of anartana vritti follows behind the process of aspiring for pure devotion, not the other way around. The process of anartana vritti is to become Krishna conscious, not to become anarta conscious. Follow? Because if we become too much absorbed in, oh, there's an anartha, and we get absorbed in dealing with that anartha, as we would not as a devotee, we lose our devotion, we lose our focus on Krishna. But rather, as we go forward with Krishna consciousness, we will discover, don't worry, I mean, without any problem, we will discover inconsistencies with pure devotion because they're there. So the balance, that's your question, is stay focused on pure devotion, which will give one the strength to eradicate and eliminate, recognize and eliminate discrepancy or the anartha or the deceptive motive. And if we, it's just another rule of thumb, is being analytical about this business is, to a degree, is counterproductive. In much the same way, becoming anartha conscious is counterproductive. Or, there's a deceptive motive. So, and that's tied to this and tied to that, tied to that. Next thing you know, we're lost again. So our intelligence is our capacity to analyze and sincerely detect some deceptive motive is important, but it's subordinate to the empowerment of devotion, real devotion. I want to achieve my relationship with Krishna. And shine that light on that dark place, that deceptive motive is dissipated. Back on track. It's dependent upon the word that I've been using is sincerity. Here it's also said in earnestness. That's the operative. That's the eligibility of the candidate for bhakti, nectar devotion. One's sincere desire to obtain the fruit of bhakti is the eligibility to perform bhakti. So as I'm going along, I see, there's a motive besides achieving the fruit of bhakti. So let me get back to the sincere desire to achieve the fruit of bhakti. That eliminates that other motive or that other purpose. It just, it's arising from the mind. And just like Krishna indicates, that the sense of duality is a product of senses and sense objects interacting, arising in the mind is a sense of duality. It's only in the mind. Okay. Just like I said to Akshay, very well, you want some attention. Sit over there for a while. I have this very important project. I want to go back to Godhead in this lifetime. I want to restore my relationship with Krishna. So you just waiting lounge, you can sit over there for a while. Occupy yourself. I'm busy. Reject it.
Maharaj, one of the questions that was raised was how is Lord Brahma's body different although he is in contact with Lord Vishnu? So has this been addressed in today's discussion? Because a lot of couple of questions around that.
Level. Yeah. Well, the question wasn't how. You're asking the how question. The question that was asked was, are they different? The answers are different. One appears in time and disappears in time. The other is eternal and transcendental. Now you're asking another question. How is it that something that's temporary and passes in time issues from something that's eternal and transcendental? Different question.
So, my question is that how is something...
I know.
How
be in contact with Lord Brahma and Sister?
It's his illusory energy. That question was asked in a different way, but it's already been answered through the agency of one of the Lord's energies, namely his illusory energy, or Atmamaya potency. He manifests temporary things. That's one of his potencies. And he displays it and covers the living entity with something temporary. Although the living entity is eternal and is related to Lord Vishnu, that illusory energy is also related to Lord Vishnu, but is illusory energy, another kind of energy, and covers the soul. What's the relation? It's like a dream. There is no relation. But it seems to have a relation. The relation is it's from the Supreme. The soul is connected to the Supreme, the Atmamaya potency is connected to the Supreme. But there's not a direct relation.
Principle you elaborated in answer to Siddhartha's question that can it be applied also in hearing, where we try to hear attentively and then scrutinizingly understand the message that is being presented, instead of trying to focus how it fits and how I can apply that to eradicate anartha?
The two. Do it again. It's clear what you're saying, the two positions. One is analyzing something and so we understand what it is conceptually, and the other is the effort to look at that something and consider if it's inappropriate or an unwanted component in my life of devotion, how do I get rid of it? So but what's your question? Those are two things. Now what's your question?
My question was because in hearing specifically, what I used to do is to take the instructions and see that this is something I'm struggling with and this particular instruction fits with this and how I can apply. And in the process, I lose focus of the whole message and what is being presented.
Yeah, you're saying what I was saying.
Is that the principle you were explaining to Siddhartha Prabhu is that you have to...
Don't become anartha conscious. Don't get lost in the process of analyzing that thing, thereby forgetting then our intelligence becomes misapplied. It drags us away from Krishna instead of becomes empowered to bring help us come toward Krishna. Once we understand that it's separate or it's keeping us, it's a mountain between us and Krishna, what do? Leave it. And take shelter of Krishna. That was the answer that I gave. Throw it out. Reject it. Discard it. Apply a little antiseptic. And go on with your real business. And if you find that it keeps coming and keeps coming and keeps coming and keeps coming and keeps coming, then it's a very deep, you have to go, it's like, you know, like a boil. Something, there's a deep infection. So, but you know, what's going on here is, what Sukadeva Goswami is answering to Maharaj Pariksit, it's very fundamental, I and mine. There's so many manifestations of I and mine. So many varieties of it. So once we see what it is, at its very root, then you accept the spiritual conception or the Krishna conscious conception of I. This is what we'll get into this in the Atmanivedana. He's going to get into it tonight. What I am is your eternal servant, and I am yours and you are mine, one says to the Lord. I am yours. Who am I? I am yours. What is mine? You're mine. Not in the sense of property, but the sense of you're my everything. There's only one thing that I consider mine, and that is my relationship with you. Not mine in the sense of property, but of what is of importance to me. You're the only thing that is of importance to me. Well, what about everything else? Well, everything else takes on some importance because it's to the degree it's in relation to you. But it's like the center of the target, and everything else is circles around the center of the target. But I'm clear about the center of the target, like Arjuna, the eye of the fish. Not just the target, but the fish, but the eye of the fish. And that's what I see. What do you see? I am yours and you are mine. So, that takes cultivation. So we have to, to not get lost by our capacity to analyze things and play with concepts like we might play at, our academic work with understanding this and that and the other thing and having nothing to do with the purpose of life. Focus on the purpose of life. Practice it. Stay focused on the purpose of life. When you pick up your beads to chant, what's the purpose? Well, I'm supposed to chant 16 rounds. What's the purpose? Anyway, get back to the essence. And we have to cultivate that because our training, prior training and conditioning is otherwise. We went through that yesterday. It's the essence is sense gratification. Get ahead so I can get sense gratification. But we've been hearing, we have to reject that in principle. What does that leave me with? If I reject sense gratification in principle, I'll be bored. I have nothing to do. I have plenty to do. Satisfy Krishna's senses. But more to do. We have to have a spiritual conception. So we put the two things together. Prabhupada gives, it's very simple. Track moves on two rails. There we go. So one, as a train moves on two rails, so we have a parallel process, something that cleanses the heart and something that keeps us steered in the right direction. The teachings and philosophy, the Siddhanta, gives us direction. And we have to combine that with that which will cleanse our heart. Chanting. We combine the two. Chanting and the activities of bhakti, meant for cleansing the heart and cleansing the senses. Practical activities, cleanse the senses. Because if it's done in the spirit of for Krishna, and the philosophy keeps us guided, who is Krishna? What is the soul? What is this material energy? What's time? How does it all work together? Two parallel things. So don't get distracted in just the figuring out the philosophy and analyzing. That's important. But it's really to assist the purification of heart, to take us to our relationship with Krishna. I agree. Yeah.
None of this was in relation to how do we differentiate between inability that one
how do you differentiate between
inability due to
what's the word?
Inability.
Inability?
Yes,
inability.
Due to false ego and feelings of inability due to genuine dependence on Krishna.
What's like the difference between matter and spirit? Well, you know, we can start, just take it for granted that our feelings of inability are probably due to false ego. That's just a good, you know, it's where we're at. Good conjecture. So, now what should we do about that fact? Well, we don't hold on to it. What do we do with it? Put it over there and go to the spiritual conception. But doesn't want to go away. Put it over there, it keeps coming back. So we have to be very firm about the spiritual conception. So we have to hear and cultivate the spiritual conception. That's a lot of that is how we chant our rounds each day. I'm a firm believer in that statement, that fact. If you really want to put that feelings of inadequacy or incompetency and over there and leave it, it stays over there. You have to have some spiritual strength. And that comes from chanting. Then you can say it and mean it. And you know, the spiritual strength holds that and diminishes it and shrinks it and disappears. How well do you chant your rounds in the morning? So work on that. Taken care of progressively. Because it's from that, I have great faith in that fact, because from that, then all the other things that are also very helpful, how you hear the class, how you associate with the devotees, how you do everything, starts with chanting. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.